Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Jessica Moss is a well-respected and talented musician currently based in Montreal, Quebec. Perhaps best known for her membership in the Silver Mount Zion Memorial Orchestra, Moss is a violinist who has played prominent roles in Black Ox Orchestar, Carla Bozalich's Evangelista, and she also collaborated with Vic Chestnut in the last years of his life. Though accustomed to working with others, Moss recently made her first solo record. It's a compelling one called Pools of Light, and is now available via Constellation Records, which has prompted her to tour across England and Ireland after some shows coming up in Montreal and Brooklyn, respectively. Jessica and I caught up for a conversation recently in which we discussed meeting Leonard Cohen during a Silver Mount Zion recording session at the Hotel Tango studio in Montreal. Being abroad when Trump was chosen to turn the United States of America into another failed casino. Parenting in a weird, weird world. Working with Kevin Doria and receiving encouragement to write her own music. Global warming, and much more. Sponsored by Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee, this is Jessica Moss on the 318th episode of Creative Control with me, your host, Vish Khanna. Hi, Jessica. How are you?
Hi, Vish. I'm well. Thanks for calling.
It's my pleasure. It's my pleasure to call you. You're in Montreal there, are you?
I am. I am actually at the Hotel Tango recording studio because my good friend Ephraim helped me set up this microphone situation because I don't have any of my own at home. So this was the easiest method.
Well, are you enjoying...
And he just happens to have the studio.
That's right. He has the studio. This is the studio he co...
Oh, he just happens to have the studio today for him. Like, he's working on stuff here. So this is what I'm trying to say. Usually it's full of people, but today it happens to be perfectly... I can use this. Okay, I'll shut up.
You've made many records in this studio, right?
I have made almost every record I've ever made almost in this studio. And that's a lot. I Googled it the other day.
What did you come up with that Google? What was the Google result?
So many. Because I was trying to compile a discography and I had to take to the internet. And it's cool. It's nice to look at that all.
Have you worked in other
but
studios?
Yeah, definitely most have been here.
Yeah, they've mostly been there.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, for sure. I've worked in other studios, but for sure, I would say 80% of recording in my life has been here.
Now, do you, having worked in other studios, do you see the virtue, the particular virtue in the Hotel Tango?
Oh, well, I mean, my sister's paintings are on the wall. There's, you know, there's so much like personal and collective and community history in here, and the energy's really good, and of course I love all the people involved, so I think it's a beautiful studio, but I could never look at it objectively. It's very personal feeling here.
Right, it's a personal space. I mean, I've been to that studio and it's amazing. It's really, and there's like weird, there's, you mentioned lots of history there. One of my favorite stories, and I don't know if you can verify this, I believe you were involved, but my friend Howard, my friend Howard told me a story of, because he befriended the late Leonard Cohen, and he told me once that there was a session going on, and I believe it might have been a Silver Mount Zion session, and apparently what I understand is you guys, because you were in a Silver Mount Zion, you're doing your thing, and then you look out into the control room, and there's just Leonard Cohen sitting there. Is there any truth to this?
It's a true story, although we weren't surprised by him being in the control room. He was announced, we met him, and then it was a moment for Sophie and I, violin, and Becky, who was in the band at the time. We were recording strings for a certain song. And, you know, Howard was like, let's work like it's normal. So we're working away. And every time I hear that song, I hear that the strings are recorded kind of funny. And it's true. They're recorded a little bit thinly, like maybe he wasn't paying the most particular attention. But it was for good reason. It's a good story to know about that song. And yeah, no, that's a true story.
What song was it?
I'm not telling.
You don't want to tell the song. Okay.
Or maybe I should. No. I won't tell the song.
You won't tell the story.
I'll tell the story. I won't tell the song. It's a wonderful Howard story. And that was a wonderful moment. And he genuinely was, it was a little bit like being in the presence of royalty. I know that sounds stupid, but he had an energy about him that was very distinct and beautiful, actually. And he was so kind and generous with his presence. And it was very special. It was a special moment for sure.
Now I know he's, as I say, he began to work with Howard and befriended Howard. Was he there for the Silver Mount Zion particularly, or was he just hanging out with Howard that day?
I think a little bit of a combination. I think Howard invited him on that day because he was thinking this might be a nice session for him to be around for. Mm-hmm. That's what I understand.
And did you?
But it was a friendly hangout.
So you say he was a kind presence and a powerful presence. Did you interact much with him yourself?
I mean, he was just generously sweet with all of us. You know, you got the feeling of a recording studio is a comfortable place for him. A recording studio is a comfortable place for us. You know, when musicians meet in places that have meaning for them, it's a certain feeling. I don't think that's true for only musicians. It's true for when you meet somebody who sort of shares the same life in some way. There's like, it's a special feeling. And, you know, just the collective amount of respect in that room for him from us. And I don't know. It was very lovely.
Yeah, it sounds lovely and it sounds personal. So I'm sorry to pry. He's more on everyone's mind these days since he passed. And this has become a story I retell because I just thought it was quite fascinating. So I'd like that you clarified some facts about it. You know, I know that everyone I knew, not everyone, lots of people in Montreal seem to have a Leonard Cohen encounter story. So, because he was outgoing. Like, did you encounter him beyond that session?
I never did, but I agree with you. Everyone seems to have an encounter or at least a one removed encounter that they love to tell about. And of course, it makes sense. I mean, he really does. I don't know. I'm not a Leonard Cohen expert at all, but he certainly, you know, was the soundtrack to my early days here, because my first roommate was obsessed, as many as many young men are. And it just, I don't know, it's like a comforting presence in the background of old Jewish Montreal, which is also my history.
Right.
I'm an old Jewish Montreal. So are my parents and my grandparents. So it feels personal a little bit, but just for sort of distance, like a distant ancestor in a weird way.
So both in an abstract and quite a literal sense, you miss him in the city.
It's interesting. I almost miss him more for others. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I was out of town when he died. I was on tour and I was just sort of watching it all from a distance. And that was obviously the insanest week of our recent lives. And I was just alone in a hotel room in Brussels. And I just felt like this love for the city. I felt love for the city loving him in a way. It feels less personal because I was less attached to him than many I know. But
right.
So I don't miss him in that way. I like talking about him now. I don't think about him that often.
Right. Okay.
As many I'm sure do.
Yeah. He just seems to be coming. There just seems to be little pieces of news about him that are circulated since he died. Just every once in a while, I'll just see something pop up.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he's on our mind.
Interestingly, he, as an old man, looked quite a lot like my bubby, my mum's mum when she was an old lady. They're like faces melded a bit. So when I think about him, I think about her. So that's nice.
Oh,
I like to think about that.
That's sweet. You mentioned that it was one of the most, the week that Leonard Cohen passed away was one of the most insane in our recent lives. I'm trying to recall that week. Was that the week of the U.S. presidential election or something?
It sure was, or something.
I just wasn't sure. I wasn't sure. So where were you?
That was the week.
Oh man, that is now coming back to me, that everything bad seemed to happen in the same span of a few days. Where were you traveling when you heard the news that Leonard Cohen had passed away?
I was on a short tour. I like to say tour. It's for, you know,
sure.
It's my own special thing.
Short form of tour. Yeah, tour. Yeah.
It's much easier for me to say. You'll just have to bear with me. Oh my God. I was on a short tour of Europe. There we go. I said it. Well, I was gone for almost 2 weeks, I guess. And so, yeah, that happened to be smack dab in the middle. It was very strange to be far when all that was happening.
All of it was happening at the same time, and you were not home. Yeah.
No. I mean, watching Trump get elected was like a strange, psychotic vision, and being in, especially for some reason, Belgium, and just where so much deep shit has happened lately, and people are just sort of like going along their day. And I know here people were like, you know, maybe more interacting with each other about what the fuck is going on.
Mm-hmm.
And in Europe it was like, wow, America's insane, obviously, you know.
Well, so Europe,
it was a little strange.
Europe might have foretold some of the sentiment with the Brexit stuff, obviously. I mean, did you talk to people about that situation?
Sure, yeah. I mean, I was actually partially traveling with a Brit, and it's just a sort of, I guess the feeling is similar. Just shake your head and put your hand on your forehead and think, how can we keep going? Yet here we have to keep going, you know. Definitely similar.
Yeah, like myself, you're a parent, and so when situations like this occur, I get very upset about the future and the world that is coming for my kids as they grow older. How do you grapple, or how does that impact you in that way? How do you grapple with that?
It's interesting because I think that's a very valid reaction, and I understand it and I see it, and I don't let myself have it in some ways. I instead, especially with the Trump thing, maybe it's just the age that Ezra is. He's 7 and a half now and so open and beautifully curious, and I find it, I love talking to him about it in some ways. I don't know if that makes any sense. He's really understands. Maybe it's because it's a bit there's like a real villain good guys narrative you can make in a way.
Yeah.
And that to help him understand how we're going to be part of the good guys somehow, and you know, just gently showing him how much injustice, how much there is wrong with the world, and seeing him really understand that he wants to be part of the solution rather than part of the problem. And so I guess I'm looking for beauty a lot of the time, and I find it there. But of course, if you're not feeling like maybe it's the end of the world, then there's must be something wrong with you at the same time.
Well, but then,
but I choose not to dwell on it. I think if that makes sense.
Well, as a parent, I find that you have to put forth at least for the most part anyway, you have to put forth this aura of optimism, and this aura of sort of nothing is wrong a lot of the times. I mean, not to suggest that I'm in my role anyway, that we're shielding our kids from stuff. I mean, my daughter's only 2, but my son is 5, and he's all of a sudden, I've been talking about this with some friends, like lots of questions about death and sex and spirituality and religion. Mm-hmm, they're just sort of coming.
Yeah, all 5 is amazing.
Yeah, and they're all very, they're significant questions, they're substantive questions, they're not just, you know, he's just grappled with all this stuff, and it's very fascinating to me. And I wonder...
Isn't it beautiful?
It is. It's a little weird because your kids are just, they just, in those questions, seem to be growing up in front of you at a rapid pace, you know? They're not, where's my fluffy bunny? They're, you know, what happens to us after?
Well, they're halfway between, where they're like, I kind of still need my fluffy bunny, but
yeah.
Tell me about the deepest thing you could possibly imagine and give me an answer.
Yeah, like he's asking about his grandparents and their ages, and I know that those are loaded questions, you know?
Yeah.
They're not simply,
yeah.
And like, how old can people live, you know? Like that's all part of it now.
Of
and
course.
Yeah. And so,
yeah, absolutely.
So we haven't, and the comic book thing is interesting because it kind of feels like we're living in a comic book. It doesn't seem real. The villains are so obviously villains and doing little to shield it. It's very confusing. And I try to commiserate.
It is it is absolutely confusing, but you know, it's sort of like how you just described it, that's how kids see things anyway, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
So it definitely gives lots of opportunities to just say, look, yeah, there's really bad things, you know, and we can, you know, knowing about them is important. And I don't know.
Well, it does.
I think it's all good for learning.
I feel like in some ways, because of who's in charge of things, it feels like, socioculturally, things seem to be dumbed down, and I'm not trying to suggest that children are. I'm certainly not suggesting children are dumb, but it does feel like
asshole.
No, I'm not at all. That's not what I'm saying. But it does.
No,
seem
I know.
Like,
I'm joking.
It seems like we have to relate to things in a childlike way because of the way facts are presented.
Yeah, I think that's
to
what
us.
I'm saying too.
Yeah, yeah. It's
exactly.
Anyway, it's very strange. You're in Montreal. How are things for you and your family in Montreal? How's Montreal?
Cold and rainy right now. there's been a lot of changes in the last few years, but I definitely think that now is a things are good. I feel extraordinarily lucky to be doing what I'm doing, and that sort of that permeates into everything that happens to me right now. So yeah, I would definitely just first say things are good. I'm a lucky person. And so things that are hard are, you know, compared to what goes on in the world are small.
Right.
So yeah. So, simple answer. Things are good.
Things are good. What kinds of changes are you referring to exactly? I mean, is this your first solo record?
It sure is.
Yeah, yeah. So,
funny you should mention my solo record.
We're going to talk about your solo record very soon. Don't get me wrong.
I'd love to talk to you about kids the whole time. That'd be great.
Well, I think having a first solo record is a marker of change. And I feel like, I assume that on some level, potentially a more direct level than maybe I realized, being a mother, being a parent, having children, having a family, going through changes, I feel like probably all of that is reflected on this record. So I'm segueing into a deep and thoughtful conversation about your record, but I just want to establish you psychologically, physically, geographically. Mm-hmm. I just want to see where you're at and what brought us to this first solo record. So I'm just defending myself.
I can tell you. I know. You're doing a great job. I'm just being silly because I can't help it. That's just what I do.
That's fine. That's fine.
I can't help it. I definitely first solo record. There are changes. That was your question. What are the changes that led to this?
Yeah.
Maybe? Is that the type of question you're asking?
That's the type. Yeah, that's the type of question. Yes.
Right. Some I will talk about, some I will not, but I have arrived at the solo place. I know there's a really good vocabulary word, damn it. I'll think about it later.
Okay.
I came to being a maker of solo music in a very roundabout way. And had you asked me even 3 years ago whether I would ever make a solo record, the answer would have been a definite no. It's always been no. I used to think about it a lot, and that I wouldn't, that I was sort of, my whole constitution and system of beliefs involves being a collaborator and a group worker and a band member, and both the way that I function internally as a person, but also just in terms of the instrument that I play since forever. You know, I'm like a person that either joins something in action or can build something from the ground up, but only with others. And so, the solo thing happened almost, it took me by total surprise, I gotta say. And it happened like a series of events that led towards me working on solo stuff. The first thing being that Mount Zion was on tour with an artist named Kevin Doria. Mm-hmm. He goes under Total Life when he performs alone. His band is called Growing. Anyway, he's like a drone master, basically. He would set up all his pedals and get up there and just create this most beautiful, enveloping, subtly changing drone, and I loved it. And I, at some point during that tour, asked him if he'd ever be into collaborating on something, which I don't do very often. Actually, I almost never do that. I get asked often to play on things, but I don't often start something new with somebody. It hasn't happened that much. Anyway, so he was into it, and we started sending files back and forth. And that was the beginning of me being in the jam space by myself. Hmm. Really, honestly, for the first time, almost. And I just started making these sounds and having these ideas, and they started flowing quickly. And then around that same time, Dawn at Constellation got a call from someone who works at... Am I talking too much?
No, not at all. No, you're on an interview podcast.
It's kind of a long story.
No, you're just supposed to talk. I mean, if it'd be weirder if you didn't say anything. Yeah.
Okay. I was like, oh, I should really find out what he's doing. No, okay.
I'm listening. No, I'm listening, and I'm picking apart. I mean, I will say I don't want to interrupt your flow of... I don't want to interrupt you, so that's why I've been hanging back here.
Okay.
But
okay, I'm going to keep going.
You keep going, and then I'll try to remember what I was going to ask you.
Why don't you write it down? Because the story is like maybe two more minutes long.
No, I have a great memory. Just an amazing, amazing memory. Yeah.
That's good. I don't. Okay. Dawn, who's right now upstairs at Constellation, got a call from this woman who books music at the Modern Art Museum here in Montreal, and it was for the first Biennale. She was looking for some interesting musical projects, and she asked him, is there anybody who would be interested in playing solo as part of this Biennale, sort of like do a site-specific performance?
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, because I don't know how or why, he recommended me, and I had never played solo. It's not something I've ever done, but I don't know. And I hadn't discussed with him that I was working on stuff by myself. It just was like a magical confluence of events. So this woman called me and I said yes. And only because I had started working on these things with Kevin and I had all of a sudden these ideas. And then I got into the jam space and it's like I couldn't stop. Things were just like bursting out. And I guess I came across the idea of making music that was narrative, that it just started occurring to me that I had stories to tell and that I could tell them this way. And that that stopped me feeling limited in being able to quote unquote write songs, because I don't think I could write a song to save my life, you know, like a regular song with words and an amount of verses and choruses with a certain amount of minutes and that kind of thing. Like if I had to do that, maybe to save Ezra's life, I could maybe write a song, but it would be, I hope I never am in that situation. It would be very bad song. It released me.
Right. Okay. And
to be able to sort of make it how I wanted it.
Do you sing songs to your son?
We sing all the time, but it's just more, we sing like silly made-up songs. My sister actually sings to her daughter, and she has always sung to my son, and it's such a beautiful thing. And I just don't have much of a relationship with lyrics coming out of my own mouth, if that makes any sense.
Right, you're not singing.
Yeah, I've always been that way since forever.
Like you don't express yourself lyrically, but do you like songwriters? Do you like lyricists?
I have such enormous respect and I think lyrics are incredible and moving. I just don't think in terms of them. And even you're asking me if I sing songs to my son, and even in that way, I don't have like a song that I know from beginning to end the way that other people do with words and music. You know, I might hum to him for 3 hours or play something on an instrument or this kind of thing. Like I really think and feel in terms of music, not in terms of words.
Okay.
It's from forever, since I was a kid.
Okay, that's fair. So I'm going to track back to, you said many...
I'm glad it's fair.
No. I'm not going to call you out for it.
I'm joking.
Yeah. I want to track back to a couple of things you said. One was you ended up in a space, you said, playing music by yourself for the first time ever, which I find almost inconceivable. Like, when did you start playing your primary instrument? So for people who don't know, your primary instrument is violin, right?
Yes, you're right. That is not true that it's the first time I played by myself. What I meant mostly was it's the first time that I've put myself in the jam space situation with all my pedals and all my amps and all my everything and just put it to work for my own ideas, as opposed to put it to work in service of whatever I'm working on, if that makes sense.
Like, yeah.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Blidge. Of being forcibly into music as a kid. So yeah, I spent a lot of time practicing on my own as a kid and did, you know, recitals and these kinds of things. But since I started playing in bands when I was 17, I haven't taken to the space where I would normally be creating with others for myself.
Right.
That's a more specific thing that I meant.
Right. You always viewed yourself as a complementary player, and the kinds of bands you were in. I mean, I'm familiar, I guess I'm mostly familiar with your work in Silver Mount Zion. What other bands were you in?
Mm. Well, there's a lot of bands in my early history, but my first main band in this world that we're talking about would be Black Ox Orchestra.
Right.
Which actually sort of started, I started playing in that band the same year that I started playing in Mount Zion, but there's bands from before that, but I don't know if do we want to talk about the bands I was in when I was 21? I'm not sure.
Well, no, it doesn't sound like it based on your tone.
No.
It doesn't sound like it.
I just mean, it's not about that. It's about, I think maybe we're talking about a certain kind of music making. And anyway, I've played in many, many bands, but my main bands have been, Black Ox and Mount Zion.
Right, but the songs, the pieces that would emerge from those bands were the result of a collective expression, and then maybe you would take stuff away with you to refine your part or something, but someone else would kickstart the idea, or other people would kickstart the idea. You felt like the icing on the cake a little bit, if that...
Sorry. If that's how it came across, that's not at all what I meant. In my bands, I felt like a one of five or one of four, 100%. Both those bands were very much collaborative.
And okay.
An idea could have come from, for the song to begin, could have come from me just as easily as it could have come from anybody else. I meant that my two roles as a violinist up until this solo output has been as a collaborator in that sense, or as somebody who gets called in to add to what already exists, but never as a solo, never just me.
Right. Okay.
That's what I was trying to communicate earlier.
So you were ushered into this collaboration and essentially trying to think of yourself as being a bit on your own because of a tour with Silver Mount Zion. Is Silver Mount Zion still going? Is that one of the... Does anything to do with Silver Mount Zion have anything to do with the fact that you went on your own here?
We're definitely on a big break at the moment.
Okay.
And I feel like however much magic there really is in the world, the fact that I started working on solo stuff in the year before the break happened, I don't know. I don't know if I somehow sensed that it was going to be time for me to start doing my own thing, or whether it just happened to be that those two things, one didn't cause the other, that's for sure.
Okay, yeah.
It just happens to be...
Yeah, I see. It wasn't precipitated by that. Yeah,
yeah,
okay. It's the way the situation is.
Nope.
So you say you had stories to tell. You had things to express. The record Pools of Light, first of all, and I haven't said this yet, The record is just lovely. I hope you're proud of it, because it's just great.
Thanks.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Thank you.
Now
I'm proud of it and interested by it and excited to know whatever everything that comes next, and it's a good feeling for sure.
And you made this in the hotel?
I did. I made it. I recorded the tracks for it at the hotel. I did a lot of work on my own in terms of editing and deciding exactly. I was very precise about this record.
Right.
Every note, almost every note. There's a few on there that I still wish I had changed, but the placement of everything, I was very clear on what I wanted for it.
Now, the record
I spent a lot of time by myself.
Right, which is good sometimes, isn't it? Just to think about things on your own.
Amazing.
Yeah.
The best.
It's a solo record, but did you collaborate with anyone in particular on these pieces?
No.
No,
it's really every single note and idea and everything is me and my violin, except during one section on the first side. Radwan, who was the engineer for the record, helped me with a organ type sound to follow the notes that I had made.
Oh, I see.
But besides that, it's all violin, it's all me and singing and that. Yeah.
So these pieces follow, after this collaboration you had with this other artist. Mm-hmm. Right, okay. Now, now you said...
Yeah, so we've also done some recording. We have tracks recorded that will hopefully see the light of day one time, but it was just starting to work on stuff by myself for him that triggered these ideas that I had that became this solo project.
And this is your voice on the record as well?
Yep. Yeah. Yes. I'm a great singer. I have a lovely voice. It's me.
It's a slightly disembodied sound. I mean, it almost doesn't sound. You've caked it in some kind of distortion, and it's a little opaque. But it's clearly. Mm-hmm. I mean, the reason I ask is initially I'm like, is that a sample? Like I was trying to figure out.
Totally.
Particularly the phrase that you employ is entire populations, right?
Yes, that's mostly on the first side. Those are the main words that get sung. There's a bunch of other ones, but they're sort of more just for me to know I'm singing them.
Right.
The main phrase that's, I mean it actually, the main phrase is entire populations, yes.
You mean it, you mean those
on that side, and on the other side, there's, I realized the other day that I read a review and somebody suggested that I might be speaking in tongues on the second half, which is super cool. But I actually am singing a sentence about glaciers melting. But anyway, it's okay if only I know that also. It gives me the feeling that I need to be making the songs and performing them, and it's okay.
Well, people can't hear words all the time when people are singing words. They misinterpret their words all the time.
Happens. Okay.
As you know, you Googled yourself recently, so you know that you've made a million records, and you know that probably most of them have been misinterpreted by someone somewhere.
Oh, true fact. But this is the first time that the words are mine to be misinterpreted, and I'm proud for anyone to misinterpret them. That's a nice anything. If they're listening, that means so much. Doesn't
right.
matter.
So I correct me if I misspeak about the record, but it's fair to say I think that the two sides are suites, right?
I'm not sure what that means. You mean
there's an interconnected
pieces?
Yeah, there's yes. pieces and they're interconnected by so side one is entire populations parts one through mm-hmm. four, I believe, and then the second side is glaciers. Oh, no, wait, do I have this right?
Yes.
Sorry.
No, listen, I'll tell you.
Yeah, you
I'll
tell
make
me.
It make more sense.
Yeah, thank you.
In my mind, there's the one side is called entire populations, and it's one long piece. It got separated into four because after the fact. So just because that seems to be like, according to the record people, a good idea.
Okay.
I trust. But in my mind and when I perform it, it's just one long piece. It's like a 23-24 minute story.
Okay.
And on the other side, there's it's also one entity, but it's split into two, and the first one is called Glaciers 1 and the second one is called Glaciers 2, and they're both they're different parts of the same story. Glaciers 1 and 2. But it's true that they're split up into parts, and I have to remember that. That's how it that's how it's being received. But in my mind, it's just one side. Side A, entire population. Side B, glaciers 1 and 2, if that makes more sense.
That does make more sense. So the glaciers are divided, is what you're saying. But the literally, they're melting and they're dividing every day. And
yeah.
And then entire
yes.
populations
yes.
is one piece. So the record is called Pools of Light.
A long story.
Yeah. Well, I actually mm-hmm. want to get into this story because we were talking about being parents and dealing with the world as it is. And maybe you don't necessarily maybe try to contemplate the future as much as maybe I am neurotically doing, I guess. But this record to me conjures this notion of climate change, of ecological collapse. Is that something that you were inspired to address?
I mean, yeah, that's what it's about. Totally. It's not true that I don't think about the future. It's true that I now just maybe as a reaction, am just trying to like, it's going to sound maybe lame, but honestly live in every day and every hour. That's all. I don't not contemplate the future. I just don't let it ruin any amount of good anyone can ever do on any one day, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I think it does.
But yes, of course, that's what the record is about. It's about the first side is about it's a story of a refugee journey, essentially, and the second side is about glaciers melting, and you know, that's what was on my mind when I was writing it and is on my mind when I'm performing it. And it's yeah, anyway, that's where the inspiration comes from, that's for sure, if you can call it that. Inspiration.
Well, and was it therapeutic in any reaction? Way was it therapeutic to kind of address this?
I think it's been therapeutic to stop beating myself up that I'm not doing enough in every way that I wish that I could somehow affect positive change in a million different, like, I want to do it so much that it has paralyzed me in the past. I think I'm certainly not alone with that feeling of just seeing so much injustice, seeing so many areas in which I wish that I could be helpful, and finding it just not knowing where to even put the it's not that I don't know where to put my first foot. It's just I just don't know. What's been therapeutic is allowing myself this moment to react in this way, knowing that at another moment I'll react in another way, and it'll be more action based. But at this moment, this is what I have to give, if that makes sense. And so it's been therapeutic just allowing myself this moment. That's for sure.
Okay, that's fair. Now, I want to ask about, you know, this is your first solo venture. Do you have future plans that you want to share with us? Do you have touring, tour dates and whatnot?
Yeah, I have, well, one thing that's very exciting coming up, which is I have three launch shows for this record, Montreal, Toronto, and New York. And my amazing and talented sister is going to join me on stage, so I'm like thrilled to bits about that.
We haven't played music
together in a very long time.
You cut out there just for a moment. What's your sister's name?
Nadia Moss.
Nadia, okay.
She is an artist in her main life and a musician, an extremely talented and wonderful musician. She's contributed artwork to lots of Mount Zion and Godspeed records, and she was a regular performer with Frankie Sparrow, and she had a band called The Witchies. And she and I had been trying to start a band together for many years, and then we finally did, and then she moved to Toronto. And so we made one three-song EP, which I think is great. Our band is called the LRADS, L-R-A-D-S, which, yes, stands for Long Range Acoustical Device. But
okay.
Anyway, you can look it up on Bandcamp, and I recommend it. Anyway, so then she moved to Toronto, but she's here now, and we're going to play together, and I'm extremely excited about it.
That's very exciting. That's great. And so you obviously feel inspired to keep making music on your own.
All I can imagine the good. No, let me rephrase. That's such a me thing to say. Okay, 1, 2, 3 steps backwards. Sorry, I should also say I'm going to be touring in June in the UK, and I'm also going to be touring in Europe in September, October with this music I'm making. And performing solo is like a terrifying venture. It's always terrifying, but as I do it more and more, I get more and more used to the feeling of being terrified while I play. And that's certainly something, that's an accomplishment, is being able to do it anyway. But it's a really special feeling to be performing by myself. And it's like a really special connection with audience, and I really am valuing it after years and years and years of playing in bands, which I also really, really value. This is a new thing, and I am excited to keep exploring it for a while.
Well, I'm glad you found this. I'm glad I'm glad Don pushed you into this, I guess, basically.
Yeah, Don and Kevin And just the stars, I guess.
Yeah, life.
The stars above.
Yeah.
Yeah, life.
Yeah.
Life, a.k.a. the stars. Yeah.
Is there a piece from Pools of Light that you would choose for us to go out on right now, Jessica?
I am really loving the one that's out there right now, which is the one that maybe I'm speaking in tongues, but you can play the very beginning of Glaciers 1, and it's... the words are glaciers melt and fill my heart, pools of dark and pools of light. That's the words.
Okay.
And the record title is Pools of Light, although in my mind the record title is Feeling Love in a Melting World, which I wrote on the back, but in my mind it's what the actual title of the record is. It's where the sentiment comes from.
Okay. Well, I hope the next time whatever's in your mind actually ends up on the spine of the record, because I'd hate for you to
it's
not...
It's on the back there.
Okay. All right. Well, for the sake of clarity, we will continue... I will call the record Pools of Light and suggest that it's out on Constellation Records, CSTRecords.com. Is there... where can people follow you on the internet?
I'm on the internet, in the Facebook under my name, and on the Instagram under my name, and the Bandcamp under my name. and I even have a website with my name. So I guess, you know, my name.
Your name, Jessica Moss. People can look it up. Okay.
Yeah, I'm not that hard to find.
Not that hard to find. This is Glaciers 1, Part 1. Jessica, thank you so much for being on the show, and best of luck with everything going forward.
Thank you, Vish.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
From her new album, Pools of Light, that was Jessica Moss with Glaciers 1. Thank you once again to Jessica Moss for being on this program. It was nice to catch up with her. And if you're not familiar with her music or her as a person, I hope you will seek her work out. She's amazing. And this record's fantastic. CSTRecords.com for more information again about this about Jessica and her record. There you go. This is the 318th episode of the Creative Control Podcast, which is available everywhere, really, that podcast exists. iTunes, audioboom.com, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, Overcast, everything, really. I think. Maybe I'm missing something. You can't keep up. There's always a thing. I hope I have most of the things. If you want to listen to the show and whatever thing you listen to shows on, go to my website, vishkana.com. There you'll learn more about the show. And also, you can go to patreon.com/creativecontrol to make a flexible monthly donation to keep the podcast going. Also, we're on Facebook. Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. And listen to a version of the show every Wednesday at noon Eastern Standard Time around the world at cfru.ca. Or if you're in the area, at CFRU 93.3 FM in Guelph. And by the way, if you're on those podcast platforms, please download the show. Subscribe to the show, rate the show, review the show. All those things seem to help it get a bit more attention. And it's, if you like the show, it's just, you just got to say you like it. Really, that's it. I don't think there's much more to it, but it helps apparently. So thank you. Thanks for doing that. This podcast would not be possible without our sponsors, the finest pizzeria in Guelph, Pizza Trocadero, whom you can call for pickup or delivery at 519-829-2444, or check them out at trocaderoguelph.ca. Also, The Bookshelf, an independently owned bookstore, bar, music venue, movie theater, and restaurant located at 41 Quebec Street in Guelph. Learn more about them at bookshelf.ca. And for the finest coffee anywhere, try Planet Bean, freshly roasted, fair trade, certified organic coffee. There are cafes in Guelph, and also they distribute their coffee beans throughout Ontario, and I think even beyond that. For more information, visit planetbeancoffee.com. Well, there's more episodes to come, of course, on Creative Control, so check it out. I'm heading to St. John's, Newfoundland. I don't know when you're hearing this, but I'll be in St. John's, Newfoundland for the Lanya Vanya Festival, May 10th to May 14th. So if you're in that neck of the woods, come say hi. And if all goes well, I'll return with more episodes. That's the plan. So there you go. All right, thank you once again for listening. I will talk to you soon. Goodbye for now.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.